Good evening. Thank you, everyone, for being here. Quick introduction. Some of you might already recognize my face, and some of you know me online through emails. I am Alder of District 12. The district I represent starts from First Street, from Burr Jones Park, East High School, goes all the way up to MATC, Truax, Dane County Airport, and then ends on the north at Warner Park, including Oscar Mayer. For the last 8 to 9 months, I receive a lot of emails, a lot of feedback. I provide that email and feedback to planning staff. I have a meeting with planning staff, express some of your concerns, some of good things I heard from, and also some of the concerns. I pass all those feedback during this process. As an alder, I organized 2 public meetings beside what effort, a lot of effort of outreach did organized by the planning staff as well. Without taking more time, I welcome all of you here. And Eric, they're already gone? All right. I will pass to Heather.
Thank you so much, Alder Abbas. My name is Heather Stouter, and I'm the director of the city's planning division, and welcome. I'm really glad to see such a great turnout tonight. I'm going to kick things off with just a few words about our city's comprehensive plan and how this effort fits into a bigger picture citywide. So the comprehensive plan, how many of you were involved at all in the comprehensive plan a couple of years ago? Anybody? Yep, a couple hands in the room. The city council adopted our comprehensive plan in August of 2018 after really broad involvement across the city with a lot of different stakeholders. We reached about 15,000 residents overall with that process. The comprehensive plan is a document that really looks out 20 years into the future, looks at our growth projections and really plans for city investment and policy for the next decade. The comp plan will be updated every decade, and we'll keep on looking forward 20 years and planning for the next 10. As you all know, the city is growing fairly rapidly for a Midwestern city. We're adding about 2,000 new housing units a year. We're on that pace and have been for the past few years. Between the years of 2015 and 2040, projections show that we'll probably add about 40,000 new households total. So that's 70,000 residents to our city of 250,000 people. So we're growing fairly rapidly once again. Meanwhile, we're trying really hard as a city to take our transit system up to the next level. Many of you have probably heard the mayor's goals toward looking toward bus rapid transit, which is really, just like it sounds, a much more rapid version of our bus system that will look at high priority stops and probably double the size of buses. And really expedite people's trips, especially commuting trips home to work. We really want to ensure that we have better mobility citywide for people to get around as we continue to grow. This area is pretty well served by transit today and will only get better as the city works towards its transit improvement goals. A big part of what can strengthen our transit system is really focusing growth within transit corridors. And so the land use or the number of housing units and employment opportunities near transit lines actually helps to bolster the transit system and ridership of that system. And so, you know, one of the essential strategies in the comprehensive plan is to try to focus our growth, so looking at those 40,000 new housing units over time, trying to focus that growth near our transit corridors in order to be fiscally and environmentally sustainable as we continue to grow. And another closely related strategy is to work toward complete neighborhoods across the city so that people have a lot more choice as far as where to live, work, and getting around between those areas. This part of our city, the area within this planning area, so the Oscar Mayer site and surrounding area, really holds an amazing opportunity to become a place to live, work, play, and get around easily to other parts of the city. So I think both of those strategies, you know, locating growth near transit and completing neighborhoods across the city, really come into play in this area right here. So I think, you know, the comprehensive plan sets a framework for us as planners and for the city council and planning plan commission to really work on these sub-area plans, these special area plans, and make sure we're working all the time to implement those bigger strategies citywide. And so we're undertaking efforts like this in other areas across the city right now, this year as well, on the south side, and then we'll soon begin similar efforts at Easttown Mall and the surrounding area, and on the far west side near Westtown Mall as well, really trying to, again, complete those neighborhoods and make sure we have ample space to accommodate the growth in housing that we're expected to experience in the coming years. I want to thank you all for your involvement so far in this process, and I want to ensure that what you've shared with city staff so far has been heard. We have many members of city staff here tonight. If you want to just raise your hands if you're part of city staff from various agencies here tonight to continue to listen. And I want to just assure you that your input thus far has really helped to shape this plan. And thank you very, very much for coming out and for continuing to be involved in the effort. As of now, I'm going to turn it over to Dan McAuliffe, the planner who's been really managing most of this planning process, and he will take it from here.
Thank you. Thank you, Heather. Again, my name is Dan McAuliffe, planner with the City of Madison. So right now, we are kind of at our second major public event for the Oscar Mayer Special Area Plan. Going back, this is the second part of a two-phase process that looks at, you know, what is the city trying to see from Oscar Mayer redevelopment in the future? What are we trying to get out of it as a city? And then how do we make that happen? So tonight, actually, before I get started, how many of you have been involved in the process thus far? Been to a public meeting or have seen the documents online? So about half. Okay, that always helps us. So tonight we're going to have a relatively brief presentation talking about what has happened so far in the process overview. We're going to go a little bit more in depth onto some of the engagement that we've done, as well as specifically talk about the key constituency advisory group, one of the efforts that we've had to reach a lot of populations that may not be underrepresented. Talk a little bit about the plan highlights and the changes that have occurred from the draft plan, which was unveiled in October, to what was... and then what are our next steps? Planning processes don't go on forever, and so what happens after tonight? Following the presentation, we're going to hope everybody grabs some bakery from Feed Kitchen, because we don't want to take that with us. So hope you guys enjoy that. And then we'll also recess to the lobby, and we'll have facilitated discussions at the stations with many of the different elements of the plan. Hopefully, we'll definitely be wrapped up by 8, unless people want to stay and talk, then we'll do that. Another thank you, I definitely want to thank Reich Schraben. They are the owners of the Oscar Mayer site for letting us hold the meeting at their newly renovated office building. It's a really great space. We think it's a sign of things to come. So looking back at our process, while the special area plan has been going on for several months now, it really started back in 2018 with the strategic assessment. And that was, as I mentioned, really to establish the vision and the redevelopment objectives for that. And a fairly extensive public engagement process that included work that was done by the Oscar group, as well as a couple open houses to really understand what residents were hoping to get out of the redevelopment. There were several strategic committee meetings, and that led to the adoption of the special area plan, which occurred in February of this year. Starting in the special area plan, we've had quite a number of meetings, some more visible than others. Many of you may have been with us when we walked the site back in, I think that was July, as well as our major public open house in October. But we've had several other meetings and continue to have other meetings. So now we're kind of coming to the end of this process where we have a draft plan, as well as a revised concept. All of that information is on our website, as well as you'll see materials out in the hallway. But a little bit more about our engagement data. So we've had over 20 different meetings or community events, again, ranging in scale from events like this to meeting with neighborhood associations or other groups trying to really understand their perspective and their thoughts. So far, we've reached about 400 to 50 to 500 people. So a fairly robust participation. That may double count some people who've gone to a lot of meetings, but that's kind of one of our metrics. We've also done some interactive polling, as you may recall, from our October meeting, as well as in online surveys. And that's certainly helped us understand the perspectives, the very diverse perspectives of residents that are participating, and help shape the plan as we move forward. I'm going to turn it over to Annette Miller to give a little bit of update as to what has happened with our key constituency advisory group. And here is Annette.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Annette Miller. My business is called Equity by Design, and basically what my work is really trying to work with organizations to help reach out and bridge to diverse voices. It can be very challenging to help people who live on the edges or not always feel represented or welcomed in public processes, maybe don't understand why they should be paying attention or what they should be paying attention to just because of the way in which processes are designed, sometimes making people come downtown, making them follow a format or a process that doesn't really make sense for how they want to give information. So what I try to do is go to where the people are and try to set up processes and ways and questions for people to get engaged and understand how they can hook into what's happening around them in the community. So I've been doing this for over 20 years, but I've been doing this as a business for 3. So I'm really excited and feel that this is good work to be done. And so I was really excited to be invited to be able to work on this project with VandeWall to talk about engagement. So our main purpose is, like I said, in terms of engagement goals, is really to try to create some momentum and interest in what was happening, helping people understand what's happening with Oscar Mayer in this redevelopment. What does it mean? What does it mean for them? Helping people understand what kind of decisions and input they could make, and really trying to put it in language that really resonates for them. So really trying to make sure that we reach the widest possible audience and then also think of different ways in which we can engage people in their participation. And then really trying to use networks that I have and others have to really get down onto the ground to really reach out into the neighborhoods, you know, into different diverse communities, African American, Latino, Hmong, mixed race, Native, Indigenous. It takes a lot of work and a lot of effort to really think about how you're going to talk about all that's happening on this type of project and then sort of customize it to these different groups. And that's what we did. So that was the purpose of it. And in doing this, we really made sure that we you know, worked with people on the north side. We worked with the different groups, you know, and really tried to leverage. There's a lot of diversity on the north side already, so we really tried to make sure that we talked to key influencers and people on the ground in the north side to try to make them aware about what was happening and really creating connections and getting advice from them on how we can include and create space for them. This was sort of the result. So even when you do good work, it doesn't mean that you always get the outcomes that you want. But we were pretty excited about the fact that, you know, we sent out 79 unique invitations to all these different racial, ethnic, and linguistic groups and cultural groups. And we had a pretty nice showing overall of 79 people who were interested and aware, and then also making sure that if in-person meetings weren't working, also looking to use online survey as another way as well, and then really sending that out to lots of different people. So what we found is that of the unique invitees that we reached out to, 60% of them were African American, 18% were Latino, and then we had another 22% that were other. Majority of participants were female, about 62%, and then males, 38%. So in working with the focus groups over the time period of June through November, and this includes the walking tour that was kicked off in June, and then with the other strategy that we did is rather than trying to talk about the fact that we have this big, huge redevelopment project, we pulled out some particular key themes that we felt would really resonate with these different racial ethnic groups. So we talked about inclusivity. What would make a community inclusive to them? How should we be talking about that? What should it look like? Transportation. That is a really key issue of concern and discussion, and always has been, but in particular, it's very important to our diverse communities. And then also talking about the economics of what it means to do a major, you know, millions, hundreds of millions of dollars redevelopment. Well, what kind of economic impact can it have to them? And what does it mean in terms of opportunities for them to build businesses, grow businesses, offer services, et cetera, right? And so we ended up doing these different themes and then inviting people into the space. So what I did is I grouped some of the responses that came from the focus group. So from a neighborhood and housing perspective, a lot of these groups talked about how everything feels really compartmentalized, that they would like to see more lighting and signage and gardens. They'd like to see people walking around. How do you know that there are people if you can't even see them? And hopefully I appreciate the fact that I see people nodding, because that means that it's not just unique to this particular, it's unique to humans, right? It's unique to people. How can people know that this place is welcoming for them if they don't see anybody that looks like them, talks like them, likes, you know, identifies like them? So really thinking about more connectivity and thinking about how can we develop the community elements that can really influence the community to be out more. And we know that we do have a streets issue, right? Like, it's a lot of concrete, very intimidating. So we know why people aren't walking around, and it's great to see really great ideas in the plan to address that. Neighborhoods are not felt to be safely connected. So thinking about, you know, how you get from A to B and how safe is it to get from A to B, what do you have to do to cross streets or not cross streets, or how much time do you have at a light to cross a really busy intersection? Are you going to feel safe? And then also having clearly marked areas where it's safe to walk and cross the streets, and different options and ways to do it. In terms of transportation, a key comment was that this area feels very vehicle dependent, that the routes don't always go all the way to the area. Sometimes people have to walk quite a bit from a bus stop. What is the north side accessible to, right? When I think of Milwaukee, that saying, the bridge to nowhere, it's like, and not that this area or this community is nowhere, it's just that the way that it's been designed doesn't help people understand where they're going or how they can get to where they're going. Thinking about transportation is missing it as a focus, using transportation as a way to leverage workforce and commerce, so that has not been done. And then also the area is not walkable or safe to encourage commerce. So if you want people to buy things or purchase things or stop and do things, then the area has to have and be conducive in order to allow that to happen. In terms of culture and community, build a space that is formed by the people. It should speak to more than one type of group. There is no sense of what community you are in. Everything that is done should be built with a pedestrian feel in mind. Can we point people towards the area and have different opportunities? The way the area is built physically around mobility makes you feel like you are not welcomed as a walker, biker, or commuter who lives in the area. It's not destination oriented. Bring more culture and character to the area. which in turn will bring more people and bring more business to want to develop the area. Signs seen in different languages makes you feel comfortable that there may be diverse groups of people in the area.
Yeah.
Economy and opportunity. This is more than just being at the table, but having the ability to change the narrative. Every step of the way needs to be intentional. This is currently an underutilized space, which creates an island effect and disconnects us. The airport is nearby, and there are no connections between that opportunity and this area. This is the area that people see when they're coming from the airport, right? This needs to be a destination for food, entertainment, etc. We want to create multi-use space with light manufacturing, job opportunities, interactive activities for folks of all ages. We want to create life. Ensuring that at least 25% of the construction and development dollars in general are focused towards minority and women-owned businesses. Hiring people who are from the neighborhood and building a renewed pipeline and workforce of people from that area. So those were the comments that came out of those discussions and those sessions. This is now the survey insights that came from folks. There were 70% of the responses were people who represented a racial, ethnic, cultural identity. 76% of who responded lived within the city of Madison, and 83% of them were between the ages of 25 and 64. So 73% responded and said that there is a good balance of housing and employment. 50% stated that the concepts presented meet the vision and the redevelopment objectives. 70% stated that the sketches accommodate growth and keep the north side character. 53% want connected local street network with direct routes to, from, and through the area. And 20% want bus rapid transit along Sherman or Packers. And then 60% said that they prioritize create an inclusive mixed-use hub that has a Northside vibe and identity. That's what they said. So I think I went over my time, but I guess what I want to say is, like all of this work, it's small but mighty, but as someone who's done engagement all over the community, I really feel like the ideas that were presented and expressed through these sessions really resonate with what all people are thinking about. But I think it's pretty interesting to see what particular demographics are really looking for and seeking when they see this kind of redevelopment project happen. So I hope this was very informative for all of you. Thanks.
Hear me anyway. Good evening. I'm Rob Gottschalk from Vandewall and Associates. We were engaged both in phase one and phase two of this project to work alongside Equity by Design as well as the city staff. So I think a lot of the things that Annette just described about a really enriched process that got a lot of good input. I think you're going to be able to see, I heard a lot of comments or reflection. You're going to see those ideas reflected in the plans that you see tonight. I think a good share of you have seen a lot of this, so I will be as brief as I can, try to take about 10 to 15 minutes total to review the entire project, which includes about 100 recommendations. I won't go over them all, but we'll hit some highlights so you can kind of get the essence of what the plan entails, and then everybody will have an opportunity, save at least an hour plus, to have more conversation about the ideas, get in a little more involved about the specifics after that. So I'm going to just jump right in. So in this entire study area, it's about 425 acres. There's over 100, close to 150 acres that are either vacant or underutilized. So this whole idea is, how do you think about this for multiple generations? This is this huge opportunity that Heather described to transform kind of the core of this area between these great neighborhoods. So one of the key things, these are the big picture concepts that were kind of developed through the input process and our analysis is, first of all, to weave. This is an opportunity to weave the north and the east sides together, make sure we keep this a major employment hub in this location, that we're creating this inclusive mixed-use hub along kind of a transformed commercial avenue that is once much more of an industrial corridor to a more walkable district, ensure there's more connections east to west with a new roadway that would go between Sherman and Packers, plan for bus and rail and transit, and incorporate the wetland into a neighborhood park, all this being a great gateway to the entire community. So those are kind of the foundational concepts that you'll see brought out in the rest of the plan. So how do those start to kind of lay on the landscape or the geography of the area? If you look at this, let's see if I can get this to work, just to make sure everybody's oriented, here's Aberg, Packers, East High, and commercial right here, just to get everybody on the map. So what you see from a land use perspective, how those ideas lay out is the majority of the eastern side is primarily employment. On the western side of the tracks is more of a mixed residential area in the future. So you'll see a fair amount of transition in the center, kind of a mixed-use, higher-density core along the Commercial Avenue corridor. And then, obviously, we talked about some of the park and open space uses that we'll touch on more. So that's overall the most basic, simplistic perspective of how this works on the western side. I'll kind of zoom in here, and you see... So you can certainly hopefully see in the back that, again, commercial Aberg, this is kind of the heart of the area, that the western side, a mix of residential uses on a grid of streets organized around a new neighborhood park. In the center, higher development intensity, the mix of uses along the street corridor organized around new urban open spaces. A couple things that have changed, I think Dan mentioned earlier, since the last draft, after we got input, a few things that have been revised is looking at this, mentioned this cross street that connects from Sherman to Packers. Originally, we were kind of looking at an orientation like this. We've worked to connect it from Roth over to basically at an intersection where Coolidge extends. we understand that's an issue for absolutely. But that also on this side of the, on the west side, that allowed the park, because we heard that there was a strong desire to ensure that there was enough park and open space, that allowed that park to grow from approximately 8 acres to 13 acres as shown here. So those are kind of the changes that we've seen. Also a little bit more flexibility and more of the area that's called the mixed use or higher intensity mixed use on the southern end of the area. I think there's so many of you that I'm just afraid that we won't have an opportunity for everybody to ask questions in the other room, so if we could hold off, I think that would be best. Thank you. So now kind of going in, within the transportation and the land use section or recommendations, not only, so that was the land use, looking at the bike and pedestrian from a transportation perspective. I know it's kind of hard to see, but you'll see a lot of the existing bike infrastructure, but it's really difficult to connect these neighborhoods in a safe way to the central city or the Cap East or East. And one of the core objectives is to add a major bike connection along the rail corridor that helps connect the neighborhoods in a safe way to the rest of the community and some other additional connections as well. Other transportation recommendations that you see on here. Was mentioned the BRT route, not sure where it's going to be, either in the future, whether it's on Packers or Sherman, but certainly stops through these corridors, the potential future for longer range rail transit, whether that's inner city or local or event, potential signalized intersections in different locations from 3rd and 6th and the area of Coolidge to provide more access as some of these sites redevelop, and also extending potential B-cycle locations from, you know, right now very focused in the downtown, starting to come out east and eventually getting up in this area as there's more development or more people and intensity over time. Some of the transportation recommendations. Oh, also, almost forgot, on the northern edge, looking at long range, are there just, could there be different configurations of the actual interchange in that location that's kind of the gateway to the area? So I hear you. So other things, so those big opportunities, how do you start to make this place? I talked about a more pedestrian environment. The land in the land use and transportation section are a variety of urban design recommendations. So these are kind of recommendations and some guidelines of how you actually create the new built environment in a way that achieves the overall vision. So there's a whole bunch of recommendations related to that. But overall, it's to create a much more pedestrian-oriented development pattern in this area, and it better knit into the surrounding environment. So you start to see images. They're probably a bit small for many of you, but looking at commercial and Packers, this is the Demitral Park right now, Madison College, the ability to transform that intersection into a much more mixed-use, active location that becomes part of the identity, overall identity of the place, of the area, versus kind of an industrial road with little access. Also gathering places that you would see along, that development would be organized around for people to come to, and businesses and food trucks and other activities. And then you look on the north end, up in the Aberg area, that the future development would have orientation and new employment and businesses that would address and create a more of a gateway into the neighborhood area. Also in the land use and transportation section, not only are the urban design guidelines, but also height recommendations. So what you see here, or have a hard time seeing in here, is each one of these little white circles has a range of heights, so that gives you an idea of the recommendations for how big buildings will be in this area. To summarize, I would say, you know, you'll see higher scale buildings in the core, approximate to where the existing, where the buildings we are in right now and along the railroad tracks, and then they transition down you know, to 2 and 3 and 4 stories on the edge as you get closer to the existing neighborhoods. Speaking of neighborhoods, housing is another big chapter of recommendations in the document. I think the most, you know, we're talking about a pretty significant amount of, at the end of the day, probably said this earlier, but the land use plan as it lays out probably can accommodate over 4,000 jobs in this area, and probably around 2,500 or a little more new residential units in this area. But the idea is to make sure that it is a complete mix of housing, not only for price points, but style and type, with higher density focused kind of in the center along this kind of transit spine, encouraging ownership opportunities as well as affordable housing in this area at a variety of different price points. So I think that's, but it is, you know, slightly higher in development intensity than some of the surrounding neighborhood areas. From an economic development perspective, so what are we talking about? Over 4,000 jobs. There was 4,000 jobs right here on this site at its peak. But we envision a much different framework. I think the real recommendation here is, as you know, that many of the jobs in this corridor historically were manufacturing. But I think there's a strong desire and strong market forces that say that it'd be really a full spectrum of jobs, and living wage jobs is a strong recommendation for this area that covers a pretty broad landscape of economic sectors. So while manufacturing will still be a component of this area, also we see service and technical trades, food manufacturing, the mixed use area might have tech office to hospitality to sports and entertainment and retail services. So really jobs that cover a wide variety in this area, which I think will make a really dynamic place and provide jobs in a walkable location to the surrounding neighborhoods. We've got a lot of existing building stock. So, I mean, it's going to be different to have this enlivened with a lot of different people, but that building stock is really an infrastructure that can be utilized versus... you know, I think a lot of people were thinking that maybe this entire area would have been scraped clean. That is not the intent, as you can tell, of the property owner who has acquired it. Through the KSAG conversations, it was also brought up that this is a real opportunity, that in this location somewhere for an incubation space that was really focused on businesses of color, and making this a pipeline so that as this entire area grows and a lot of people of color and other people who have hit significant barriers to entrepreneurship and business development in this community would have a better opportunity to help to be actively involved in riding this next economic wave in this area. And it's very intentional as part of the overall recommendations of the plan. You know, the other piece of this is, you know, as we look at this transformation to a whole different subset of jobs in this area is, you know, you've got East, Shabazz, you've got Madison College, the Job Center, all this educational infrastructure. Let's make sure that our next generation of kids and members of our community are totally dialed in and prepared for the next wave and the skills that are needed to meet the next wave of jobs that are within our own community right here. So that's another strategy and approach that's been recommended to ensure that we're working with all those bodies in the future, to are not today and also in the future as this area transforms. And I think, you know, a lot of people think of a major employment center, especially today. You see them on the edge, a big industrial park or a business park that's maybe a little bit more sterile. That is clearly not the objective here. It's to create this real place that has the infrastructure that stays, but also kind of build on that, make sure that it kind of fits the personality of the North Side, that it kind of maintains this North Side vibe with the local businesses integrating with local art, attractions, performance venues, public spaces, the things that tie this to place, and ensure that's deeply knit into the development of the entire area. There's also a layer of recommendations around sustainability and being green and resilient. One of the key areas here is ensuring that we preserve the wetland that's on the west side of the study area and integrate that into a park. There's recommendations about different passes of inactive uses in that area. Stormwater is a big issue, as we all know, in our community. Making sure that the next wave, that we're really taking that into consideration as to the types and how do we improve the stormwater quality, but also try to handle some of the quantity issues as these areas develop. And certainly from a carbon perspective, just the orientation of what we're looking at from a transit-oriented and walkable area to reduce the amount of carbon through reducing the amount of single occupancy vehicle trips is really the overall objective of the plan as well. And the last section of the plan is, so a lot of these things are the what. This is more about how do you get it done. There's a section on governance and implementation steps. A lot of this property is not owned by the city of Madison. So it's going to take a lot of partnerships. This is a pretty ambitious vision and plan for this area when you take all the pieces, you know, and especially when you get into the meat of the recommendations. It could be have a pretty transformative impact, but that is only going to happen with a, you know, it's not going to happen by itself. It's going to take some proactive work on behalf of the city, the private sector, institutions, neighborhoods, development community, the business community, make that happen, and use the economic tools that the city has and the city and the state have to help pull this together. So with that, I will turn it back to Dan, and we look forward to talking more about the details as we kind of wrap things up.
Thank you, Rob. And just recapping, as you probably saw on the way in, there's a summary of public comment, but just recapping the fact that, you know, what we've heard so far, the major concerns, certainly with the Hartmeyer property, what is that balance of open space versus the development? We're hoping that we struck the correct balance that balances the city's need for locating housing on transit routes, but also the preserving and protecting the wetlands and providing sufficient open space for the current and future residents. Certainly with Coolidge Street, the residents justifiably have a concern about the impact on traffic. There is a lot of support for a bike and pedestrian connection. Thinking about how that intersection, are there ways that it can be configured to limit the through movement? Certainly that's something that can be looked at moving forward. The metro facility, the satellite facility, we've heard concerns about the impact of traffic as well as the impact on the rest of the development. Certainly those are things that we think can be addressed as well. Roundabouts, we understand that some folks are not fans. And as we've explained in the document, that the roundabouts are really just kind of a possible intersection type, but that really will be determined by future study, if those happen. So what's next? So this is pretty much wrapping up our presentation for tonight. So after, actually this next slide, we'll be recessing into the other room. And again, I want everybody to grab some Feed Bakery brownies and cookies on their journey to the lobby. That sounds kind of funny. So what happens after this? So there's discussions. Hopefully everybody got the yellow comment card. Love to hear what everybody has to say. It certainly helps us as well as decision makers in the process move forward. On February 10th, we will be discussing the draft with Plan Commission, the draft concept, the changes. Plan Commission, we will certainly be asking them, are you comfortable enough with the draft where it is at to begin the official city review process? And that's what's called introduction. That could occur if Plan Commission says, yes, we're comfortable enough with it. We can start the decision-making and approval process with an introduction to council on 25th. That is really, we call it the approval process, but it's really where elected and appointed decision-makers start making decisions. We'd anticipate at least 4 public meetings through the course of that, and those will be certainly if you're on the email list, either the Oscar Mayer email list or I'm sure Alder Syed's email list, you'll certainly be aware of those. We don't know exactly what they are because council needs to decide which boards, commissions, and committees will review the document. Ultimately, though, we're looking at a possible decision by council and plan commission either in late March or mid-April. Then after that, moving into implementation, there's a fairly lengthy to-do list that we need to start doing. conversations with the railroad, conversations with property owners, conversations with DOT, all things that need to occur prior to this 20 to 30 year vision coming true. So with that, I want to thank you all for attending. Grab some bakery. And also, thank you, Heather. One thing that we are doing starting this year is we're tracking our attendance at public meetings to see how well we are reaching all of Madison's population. So please fill out the blue sheet. Justice got some basic demographic information. We'll be putting that out at the end of the year, seeing how well we're doing as a staff reaching all of Madison's residents. So, all right. Thank you, everybody.